Welcome everybody to episode 26 of the Blue Skies Dronecast, the podcast by UAV Hub. This is a podcast for the UK drone industry, discussing everything from the UK regulations, new drones, and also speaking to you, the people within the drone industry. Presented this week by Tom Patterson, Adam Giorgio, and Matthew Hurst. So welcome again, everyone, to episode 26. We're recording a little bit earlier this time to help us out with the Black Friday madness that we're expecting. So, yeah, we've got a nice episode for you this week, though, however. And we're going to be talking about basically the importance of understanding and being able to fly in non-GPS or ATI mode. We've had this come up a few times kind of during flight tests and questions from our students. So we thought actually we'll pull together some information about this because some people might know a little bit about ATI mode or non-GPS mode. Some people might not know anything. So we're going to talk about it a bit more and explain why it's very important to understand. Also why it's important to be able to fly in that mode too. And then we're going to finish off this episode with a case study just to illustrate why all of this is very important to understand, like I mentioned, and the skill set is going to be used at some point, probably in your sort of your drone journey, I guess, really. So what we'll do then is we'll kick off with a bit of information about this ATI mode or non-GPS mode, I suppose. And what we'll do is we'll start off with Matthew giving us the lowdown on what is it all about, I suppose. So Matthew, over to you.
Thanks, Tom. Yeah, so ATI mode is one of those sort of elusive things that's becoming less and less known about, I think, because as technology moves on, and as we'll hear in a few minutes, less and less drones have actually got this incorporated. But basically, what ATI mode does is it eliminates the GPS from the control system. So you've still got full control of the aircraft. It's perfectly stable. It responds exactly the same, but it doesn't hold position. So if you're flying in any amount of air movement, if it's a bit turbulent, if there's any amount of wind, the drone will move with that air movement and it won't hold its position.
I see. So actually quite a simple sort of definition, really, isn't it? You know, when you sort of put it into words. But I think until you've actually tried to fly an aircraft in that mode, you don't really realise. It all sounds pretty easy to start with, but actually it gets a lot harder. And especially with stronger winds, that really does play a part in sort of the controllability of the aircraft as well. So you've got to counteract the wind. I think that's the biggest thing. And people, again, might think, well, that, yeah, fine, in the wind will blow and I'll just do the opposite. But actually, as the drone is turning through 360 degrees, obviously you've got to compensate in different directions on the fly, which is when it starts to get super difficult, isn't it, Matthew?
Yeah, that's right. You suddenly realise how much technology is doing for you when it disables or when you switch modes manually.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, big time. And a lot of students have said that as well, I think, when they've been flying during their OEs too. Okay, so we know what ATI mode is now and sort of what it'll do to your aircraft. We'll move on to Adam explaining now what aircraft types actually have this mode, because there's a bit of a divide now, it seems. So, yeah, Adam, what do you think?
Yeah, so it's as kind of Matthew's already said, it's one of those things that's the aircraft or the more modern aircraft that are coming through now actually don't have the ability to be put manually into ATI mode. So, for example, the DJI Mavic 2 doesn't. And the Zoom doesn't. As far as I'm aware, the Mavic 3 doesn't. I haven't seen anything that says that that can go into ATI mode. The mini series doesn't. The Air series doesn't. So a lot, you know, I would say, you know, the 90% of the consumer aircraft don't have an ability to manually go into ATI mode. So you'll probably find if you've got some older aircraft, such as the DJI Phantom series, including the Phantom 4, which you can still get, that does have an ATI mode. It does have an ATI mode switch. The Inspire series does, the Inspire 1, Inspire 2. The Matrice 200 series does. Mm-hmm. That still has an ATI mode. Interestingly, though, the Matrice 300 doesn't, as an enterprise aircraft. That does not have an ATI mode. We've recently realised that the Mavic 2 Enterprise does have an ATI mode. That has been updated through firmware last year to allow it to go into ATI mode. So there is a very kind of hodgepodge of, well, most consumer doesn't, and only some of the enterprise or professional does. Yeah, so it's a bit of a weird one that, you know, whether it does or it doesn't.
Yeah, Exactly, yeah. And I think that's the strange thing. And I think the most important thing for people to understand is that all these aircraft will go into ATTI mode. You know, they all have this ability, but only the ones you've mentioned actually have it selectable. I think that's the most important thing to sort of be aware of, isn't it? And I think, interestingly, you'll only come across ATTI mode in those aircraft in an emergency, I think, as well, which is interesting too. Okay then, so we know why ATTI mode is important, and we now know about the aircraft that actually have this mode selectable, I suppose. And like I was alluding to before, obviously ATTI mode is important even if you don't intend to fly in that mode, purely because in an emergency the aircraft will actually drop into that automatically. So it could be you're flying along, suddenly you have a loss of GPS, and the first time you've actually tried to fly in this mode will be in an emergency when actually you're probably not really ready for it. So again, Matthew, do you want to kind of sort of expand on that sort of notion, I suppose, really, with that side of things? What could people do to potentially to be ready for this, do you think?
Yeah, of course, Tom. I think it's very important to be skilled in the mode if you have it available in your aircraft. If you can do that, you're minimizing the risk of an incident considerably, because the day that it happens, you'll be prepared for it and you'll be comfortable enough to be able to land safely. So if we jump sort of straight into a couple of good ideas in terms of learning the skills safely and without the risk of damaging your aircraft in the process and so on, there's a couple of specific things that I would suggest. So the first thing, of course, is give yourself plenty of room. So initially, it may well feel quite uncomfortable. You may end up drifting around a bit more than you normally would. So certainly give yourself plenty of room. That's the first thing that's absolutely crucial. Don't find yourself in a tight space with obstacles that you're trying to avoid while you're still learning how the aircraft flies in this mode. Now, the second thing that I always suggest, and this is one of the things which I use when I do any form of training, is to have a bailout strategy in your mind. And that meaning, if anything goes wrong, your plan is immediately to switch to GPS and then reassess. Don't sort of fight it to the end and see what you can do initially. In the first stages, when you're getting used to it and feeling what it does and how it responds, have that in mind. That's your primary. If anything goes wrong, switch back to GPS and immediately your aircraft functions exactly as you've experienced it before. And then, of course, it makes perfect sense to give yourself the best possible opportunity is to start with the aircraft in the simplest orientation as well. If it's pointing directly away from you, all of the controls are sort of instinctive. When you switch modes, it may drift slightly, but it'll be instinctive for you to be able to counter that. If we were talking sort of orientated so that it was pointing diagonally over your shoulder, for example, you'd find it very tricky to make corrections immediately. So as you become more and more comfortable, you can play around with those orientations and ultimately become totally comfortable with the aircraft in all orientations, of course. And then the more regularly you do this practice, the more comfortable you will become with it, and it'll become instinctive. I wouldn't necessarily suggest that it's a skill set that I would use regularly and fly around in that mode day to day, but in terms of practice and keeping your currency up, I think it's certainly something to focus on for sure. The other thing that one can consider is to look at something sort of small and economical, a toy drone in effect, to go and play with and sort of have a bit of fun with, something really economical so that if you do have accidents, it's not too much of a concern and not too expensive to sort of repair and get yourself flying again. So those would be sort of a list of tips, I would suppose you could call them, but basic guidance with regard to getting yourself comfortable and able to handle the aircraft in this mode.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's the key, because obviously a lot of people listening to this podcast won't have the ability to actually flick into this ATTI mode. So, but they might think, well, how can I actually practice in this mode? The sort of advice we would give really is to purchase a small drone, a toy one, maybe off Amazon for sort of, you know, £30-40, etc., which won't have GPS mode. And so you're kind of forced to fly in that mode, and you can practice inside as well. You know, there's sort of that benefit too. But crucially, if you can practice outside, those stick controls are then transferable to your Mavic, for example. And then if that ever does lose GPS, hopefully you'll suddenly be like, oh, actually, yep, I've done this before, this is easy. And to be honest, yeah, a Mavic in ATTI mode will probably be much easier than a little small toy drone in ATTI mode, won't it, Matthew, as well? So
yeah,
you've sort of practiced on a really difficult drone, which will make you much better at piloting as well, which I think is you know, a very important thing to understand too. So hopefully that's helpful for people. And obviously then, when we're talking about the fact that the aircraft sort of will drop into this ATTI mode, in an emergency. Certain aircraft, I think, do sort of different things. So obviously, a lot of people seem to think that they can still press return to home. Obviously, that isn't going to work because obviously the drone has lost GPS. That's how it gets back home. So Adam, if you want to sort of talk us through this section, really. So what do the aircraft do normally then when they lose GPS, do we think?
Okay, so there's a number of things that could happen, and it's probably worth checking with your specific drone to see what will happen if you do lose GPS signal. So the majority is that it will essentially drift with the wind. It'll go into ATI mode, and it will, I suppose, essentially stay stationary as long as you're not putting any control inputs, but it will drift with the wind. You are in ATI mode. Now, some might just land in situ. Now, obviously, because it's got no GPS, it can't return to home. It won't automatically return to home. So it might just go, well, I'll just land here, which could be, you know, on top of a roof. It could be, you know, in someone's garden. You know, it doesn't, you know, wherever it is you're flying, it might just go, oh, I'm just going to land. You might want to check to see if it will do that. Like I say, the other option is it might just drift within, and then you'll have to manually bring that back home yourself without the reliance of GPS. So if there's no GPS before you take off, it's likely that the aircraft will just ground you. It will just be like, no GPS, can't take off, waiting for more satellites is probably what you'll have on screen. So it's likely you'll just be grounded if there's no GPS before you take off. But it's this crucial thing that if you have already taken off, you know, when you're already 20, 30, 40, 50 meters away from yourself by now, and it switches into ATI mode, that's where you're going to find yourself potentially in hot water if you've never practiced.
Yeah, I think something I can add to that as well, Adam, is that people shouldn't think that this is very, very unlikely. I think it's something that certainly can happen. It's something that I've seen a couple of times during flight tests. It's certainly not regular by any means, but it's one of those things that we need to be prepared for because it really can and does happen. As we chat about the case study a little later, we'll also find that even the most sophisticated aircraft can end up in this situation.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting that I think it's almost like a backwards thing, I think, with the manufacturers, that they're potentially trying to prevent a crash from happening by not allowing the consumer to go into ATI mode. Because I would assume that some people, in fact, we have seen this before, that, you know, they've just fired up the aircraft, they're on the controller, they've got it in ATI mode, and they've taken off and gone, what the devil's going on here? And it's flying right all over the place, you know, it's drifting with the wind. And I think some of the manufacturers are doing is they've gone, to stop that happening, we'll just stop people going into ATI mode. We'll just have GPS, and then it'll have to go into ATI mode anyway if it loses
no choice,
GPS. But this is where the potential of the problem is. That I think it's something that they should do is even if, you know, they have removed the switch from the controller, a manual switch, I think they should still have something, you know, you go into the settings to put it into ATI mode, or you can program a button to go into. So those that know about it can go into it.
I agree with you. I think that makes perfect sense. If you look at things like sport mode, and when you get a brand new aircraft, often they're in beginner mode and you have to sort of unlock that within the menu structure. I think that makes absolute sense to have that available. As you say, I think statistically, you'll probably find that the manufacturers have found that a lot of accidents were happening in ATI mode, and they thought, well, let's eliminate those accidents by removing it. But as you say, it's still likely to happen at some point in time. And then, of course, the people aren't ready to handle that.
Yeah, it's the ones that have never experienced it. Those are the ones that are gonna have the accident. I think it's interesting that it's the M300. Obviously, you know, a very expensive aircraft, enterprise level drone, does not have the option to go into ATI mode. Now, I know that it's not designed to be flown in that kind of way. Obviously, you know, it is a sort of an inspection type drone where you will want, you know, precise movements held in GPS. But it's the fact that, well, I would want to practice with that aircraft to make sure that if, heaven forbid, anything was to go wrong with it, I know how to control it in ATI mode. But it doesn't have that option, which is such a shame.
It is a shame. I agree with you entirely. I think, again, they probably got to the point where they feel that technology is reliable enough and it has enough backup systems so that it's never going to be happen, yet they still include the default that it's going to drop into ATTI when things do go wrong. So yeah, it's very, very interesting, as you said.
Yeah, but it's nice that they've, as we kind of mentioned earlier, that the Mavic 2 Enterprise range now has ATTI mode. So it's, again, it's one of those, like, they've gone, oh, well, actually, these consumers want ATTI mode.
In a sense, we're talking in circles just the way they're probably thinking in circles with regard to the safest plan.
Exactly.
Good stuff.
So just so the listeners are aware, Tom's just had to drop out of the podcast. He might be back, he might not be back, but we're going to continue on discussing. We've now reached the point where we're actually going to have a look at a case study. Now, I think we might have mentioned this one before on an earlier podcast, but I think it's relevant to actually retell the story for those that haven't heard it, and for everybody to learn, because it really ties into this message about ATTI mode that we've been discussing. And this is the case of an M600. It was an M600 Pro, actually, and it has 3 GPS sensors, and it lost GPS. Now, this happened back in December 2019, so not that long ago. You know, today's date we're recording this, 24th of November 2021, so we're getting on for 2 years ago, so not that long ago.
And so, no significant change in technology either, I think, is very relevant, apart from the time frame.
Well, that's it. I mean, the M600, it's the fact that, you know, I've just stipulated 3 GPS sensors. You know, so there was fallbacks, but what we're going to do, I'm going to read off from what's called the AAIB report, the Air Accident Investigation Branch report. So this report was done after the crash happened, and it's something that should always be reported if you have an accident with your drone. So if your drone does crash, you should report it. You should report it to the AAIB. Check out the CAP 722 for the procedures on that if you don't know already. This is regardless if you fly in the open category, you know, the A1, A2 or A3 subcategory, or whether you're flying in the specific category with an operational authorization. If you have an accident with your aircraft, report it, whether it was your fault or not, because the idea is we're going to learn from it. And so we'll tell this story now from the AIIB report, and and then we'll kind of discuss the implications after, and actually the wider implications for the industry. So so from December 2019, the takeoff was normal, but as the aircraft approached 100 feet AMSL, which is about the height of 65 foot above ground level, so not a significant height, I would say, considering we can go up to 400 feet. The pilot noticed that a GPS compass error was displayed on the controller. The aircraft stopped climbing and proceeded to fly in an east-north-easterly direction at a ground speed of about 13 knots, whilst maintaining an altitude of about 100 feet AMSL. So just to kind of summarise that, obviously, at this point, it's dropped from GPS mode into ATTI mode. And you can tell that it's an ATTI mode because actually the height has stayed current, but it's moving. It's moving away, so it's drifting with the wind at this point.
That's right. So it's in stable flight, but out of the pilot's control in terms of holding its position. Sorry, out of the GPS's control in terms of holding its position.
So just continuing on, the pilot and observer reported that they were initially taken by surprise. The pilot then selected the return to home function on the controller several times, but the aircraft did not respond. Within about 10 seconds, the pilot and observer lost visual line of sight with the aircraft when it travelled beyond a line of trees located at the boundary of the construction site. And this is the interesting point, no manual flight controller input were made using the controller. So again, just to summarize there, essentially, you know, it dropped into ATTI mode, and they know it went into ATTI mode because it said there was a lack of GPS. Now, instinctively, what they should have gone is, there's no GPS, return to home won't work because there's no GPS. Return to home relies on it. But obviously, you know, I imagine, you know, they panicked. You know, they panicked, just like, return to home, return to home, return to home. You know, they just didn't think to actually pilot the aircraft, you know, manually pilot the aircraft, because they were already using waypoints. So it was in an automated flight at the time, which I think we didn't mention at the beginning. So this was in an automated flight using waypoints. So the pilots were used to not putting any control input into the aircraft. Essentially, they just took it off, went to the computer, said, fly this path, do your thing. So they hadn't had that constant experience of piloting the aircraft. So yeah, they were always relying on the backups of the aircraft. And at this point, obviously, the backup failed.
Yep. So immediately, Adam, if I could just pause you for a moment there before we read further, I think two points to take away from that is, firstly, one of the points I mentioned earlier is you need to have that default go-to sort of plan of action. And in this case, they did not do that. They didn't immediately figure out what had happened and sort of handle the situation accordingly. The second thing is also the relevance of doing regular practice so that you are prepared for it and comfortable in that mode as well.
Exactly. So just kind of continue on with the report. So the aircraft proceeded to fly overhead a large industrial area before approaching a housing estate located 300 meters from where it had taken off. So at this point, it's actually traveled quite a distance. The aircraft had continued to maintain its altitude. Again, it's in ATI mode, so it can maintain that at that altitude. However, its relative height above the ground reduced as it approached the housing estate due to the rising terrain. So, so essentially the terrain obviously went up, so the distance between the ground and where the aircraft was much smaller, which comes into the next point. The recorded logs from the aircraft showed that the aircraft collided with the roof of a house before falling into the rear garden of the property. There were no persons in the garden at the time. The aircraft's propellers, arms, landing gear, gimbal, and camera lens were damaged. The flight time for when the GPS compass error had occurred and the aircraft colliding with the house was 75 seconds. So that's crazy. You know, you have to think that from the point of them losing that GPS signal, within 75 seconds, it had travelled circa 300 metres and crashed. Yeah. Now, that's not a lot of time to react, and I can understand why, you know, I suppose panic stations are going, they were just going, return to home, return to home, return to home, because there isn't a lot of time to react, but they should have tried tried putting some controller inputs in, and that's the last point, is the controller had remained in radio contact throughout the flight, so there was always a connection between the controller and the aircraft. It's not like it had lost any connection. It's just that the pilot hadn't thought to try to pilot the aircraft.
Yeah, that's right. And I think, interestingly, all they needed to do initially was increase the height. The aircraft was drifting. It was maintaining its stability, though. And, of course, they lost visual when it went behind the tree line. So all they actually needed to do was increase the height so that they could maintain visual. From experience, an aircraft of that size, an M600, you will be able to see at 300 meters. That's going to be about the limit of VLOS with that aircraft, I would suggest, depending on the conditions. So they actually could have bought themselves loads of time purely by increasing the height. Of course, ultimately you'd get to the height limit if you were to keep going a kilometer up, but by that time you've lost visual anyway. So yeah, it really is quite shocking that no control inputs were even tried. I mean, that would be the first thing I would try. If I didn't know the orientation of the aircraft, I wouldn't just start throwing the sticks around and trying to sort of fly it back at low level. The first thing is to just gain height so that you can still see it, of course. And they just failed to do that, unfortunately. I think we must also concede that looking at this report, we're looking in hindsight, and it's easy to nitpick. It is very easy to get sort of panicked and so on. But again, that's the whole reason for doing all of that practice and being able to handle these situations.
Yeah, I think it's also worth noting the M600 does allow you to go into ATI mode. So, and these pilots did hold a PFCO at the time, the Permission for Commercial Operation. That's now effectively the operational authorization. And it's actually from this report coming out, it became absolutely mandatory that you practice emergency procedures. Now, this is where I have a little bit of this is where the bugbear actually comes into place, because yes, you're supposed to practice for a loss of GPS. Now, if in my operations manual I only have a Mavic 2 Pro, I can't practice with that aircraft specifically in ATI mode should I ever lose that connection. So it's a bit of a weird one, really, that yes, I should practice this, but I can't. And I suppose that's why we've kind of, you know, we have said earlier, actually, get yourself a toy drone. Get yourself something that you don't mind breaking if, you know, the worst should happen. Yeah. Just to get that practice in, because it can happen. You know, these guys were using an aircraft that's pretty damn stable. 3 GPS sensors. It shouldn't have failed, but it looks like there was a lot of potentially electromagnetic interference in the area, which blocked out the aircraft. Again, I know I'm sort of going on quite a bit here, but there's another bit to the story, which is when this aircraft crashed, the crew actually had a backup drone. They had another smaller backup drone. They sent that up to try to see if they could find where their Matrice had crashed. Now, when they took it off, they realised they were having the same issues again. So they realised that they weren't getting GPS with this aircraft. And they thankfully landed and there was no issues with that one. But it just goes to show that it wasn't an aircraft issue. It was a localised issue on the area. So obviously, you know, as part of that, we perhaps need to look at how to check for GPS interference within in an area before you take off. Because if this was to happen to you and you've never had any practice, as these guys didn't really since they did their training course, the worst could happen.
Yep, for sure. Yeah, I think the other element to talk about as well is complacency. And again, I'm cautious to sort of put blame on people, but looking at the facts, it does seem like a complacency issue to me as well, because I think if they'd had the training previously to have gained their PFCOs, they would have had to be able to control the aircraft in ATU mode. That's part of the requirements of the flight test associated with the PFCO. And of course, they weren't able to do it by this time. I don't know quite how long they'd been operating this aircraft. Do you know that, Adam, from when they got the PFCOs to the time of the incident?
Off the top of my head, it might have been about 12 months to 2 years.
Yeah, so that's a fair amount of time. If you can imagine not driving for 2 years and just jumping straight back in the car, it might feel a little bit strange. You'd probably still be able to do it, but you may well need a little bit of practice to get back up to speed again. So yeah, I think complacency is certainly a good thing, a relevant factor here for sure. And as we've said a couple of times, that practice is going to be the crucial element in my mind here. As you've said, checking the airspace and so on is certainly a good idea, but irrespective of all the checks, it can still happen, so you need to have the skills available.
Exactly. One of the things I do want to sort of mention, I think I have previously mentioned this earlier in this episode, is the practice for emergencies is required to hold an operational authorization, but it's not for the open category. So for the guys that are doing an A2 CFC course or flying a Mini, for example, yes, it is deemed low risk, but there isn't anything within the regulations or the guidance that says, well, actually, you should practice ATI mode. You should practice for the event of a GPS loss. I think there is some element in there within the requirements a little bit, but it's like, well, again, how do you do it with a Mini 2 that won't let you?
Yeah, perhaps that's a sign of the times that the regulators have also looked into the available technology and realized that it's an unrealistic requirement to put into the regulations, because obviously people would be sort of legally obliged in a sense to do that practice. But if the aircraft aren't capable, how are they going to be able to do that? So perhaps that's why there's a gray area like that.
Yeah, yeah, I do think it's an interesting one. I think we've seen less and less people doing the GVC course, the General Visual Line of Sight course, coming through with an aircraft that can fly in ATI mode. And it's, I've always, in fact, I think I'd say this, we've all said this a little bit, it's a bit somewhat worrying that you can do the training or you can do a course on something like a Mini 2, for example. There's nothing stopping you doing that, but it does then allow you to fly something like a Matrice 600 in this case,
yeah,
in ATI mode. But if you've never had that practice or sign off, yeah, this, who's liable? Is it us as the training organisation? Because we haven't signed you off that you can fly in ATI mode, but we couldn't because the aircraft didn't. Or is it on the, well, it is at the end of the day on the pilots to make sure they can. But yeah, there's always a bit of, kind of, I suppose, a bit of liability there that can trickle back to us.
Yeah, I think the reference, I think your reference to the ops manual becomes very relevant at that point. I think looking into what's in your ops manual and your training requirements internally becomes very relevant at that point for sure. If it's in your ops manual and you're required to do that training, then one way or the other, be it with a toy drone or another drone that is capable, then you're going to have to do that so that you're ready. Otherwise, yeah, you could be found to be have been operating negligently if you haven't been doing that necessary training.
Yeah, exactly. So I think that hopefully that's kind of rounded off the episode. I do apologise that we did lost Tom earlier on in the episode, but hopefully we've styled it out okay. you've got anything else to add, Matt, to the end of the episode?
No, I think it's been very constructive. I think the structure of this episode is actually rolled out very nicely, and I think it's made a clear point for people to understand, and I'd be surprised if people don't respond and go out and try and gain these skills.
Yeah, perfect. Right, everyone, that's us signed off for this episode. So if you've enjoyed the episode, do leave us a review on whichever podcast platform that you're listening to, or drop us a comment on YouTube. Subscribe to the channel, and we will see you in the next one. Fly safe and blue skies.